Greetings and welcome. My name is Christian. I'm glad to be with you this morning. This morning we begin what we will do all summer long, and that is quite simply listen to the words of Jesus. Any of you ever have one of those Bibles with the red letter print? When I was a young man, I was given one of those as a sixth grader, and I remembered always being fascinated by the red words. And then when I got off to seminary, I learned that you shouldn't only pay attention to Jesus' words, but to all the things around it. And I think there's some good truth in that. But every now and then, I think there's something absolutely wonderful in just allowing your attention to be entirely wrapped up in the words that Jesus said. Has anyone else ever found that to be true? Maybe? I hope so. I know for me, there have been times when there's some phrase of his, something that I recall that comes to mind, that the Spirit brings to me that Jesus had said, and it's like food for my soul. And my hope this morning and for this whole summer is that each person who chooses to be here would be fed and nourished on the inside by listening to the words of Jesus. This morning, we're going to hear a word of comfort from him. It's a word of comfort that also is accompanied by a word of challenge. Let me ask you to think for a moment. Are there any here this morning who could use a word of comfort? Do we have any people among us whose souls are weary or heavy burdened? I dare say that there are. And I know that partly because some of you have become close to me and I've listened to you share your own burdens. And I think about you and I pray for you. And I myself have things that burden this heart of mine. And so I want to start this morning with a simple saying of Jesus that is meant to go to every person who knows what it's like to struggle. And I know there's some of you here. I want you to listen to what he says. Before we hear his words, though, I want to orient all of us to what he'll say with a discussion about art. You know who painted this? Yes, it's right. It was... Someone with some courage. Who painted that? Vincent Van Gogh. When I was a high school student, one of my favorite classes was art, and it was partly because there was no homework and because Mr. Brown was a real pushover. But I also really liked looking at colorful paintings. And I loved Van Gogh. This is called Starry Night. I also loved Don McLean. You know that song? When I finished high school and went off to college and then to graduate school, I didn't spend much time in art, but there was one evening when I was at a social gathering with lots of people, and I was feeling dreadful. I felt alone even though I was surrounded by others. You know what that's like, right? And so I sat at the coffee table in this stranger's house where the party was, and I saw a Van Gogh coffee table book, and I flipped through it. And toward the end of that book, I came across this painting. Have any of you ever seen this one? It's called At Eternity's Gate. I was there in that crowd, filled with people looking at this painting. And it was something about the way this man's face was buried in his hands. The way his fists were clenched tightly, the odd angles of his feet pointing toward one another, his crumpled up posture, and that awkward seat he was sitting in. I just couldn't look away from it. I kept staring at it. After that party, I found the book in the library. I photocopied it. I then cut that out and I pasted it on my desk, and I looked at it every day for years. And you know why I looked at it? I looked at it because that was me. Not on the outside. Most people didn't know because I hid it. But that was what my soul felt like. You'd be surprised, I bet, if our souls were worn on our outside, how many people looked like this in this theater this morning even. Van Gogh was a genius. He was so talented as a painter. His life was filled with anxiety and depression. Maybe some of you know his story. He loved a woman who didn't love him back. He decided to be a priest and he went off to do missionary work, and the church thought he was a disgrace to the priesthood. He started to sketch and draw people. He had some talent. In 1888, he checked himself into an asylum with the help of his brother Theo, who loved him very much. He had two rooms at the asylum. One of the rooms was where he slept and passed his time while he was not in the other room, which was for his painting. You know, most of the paintings that you've seen of Van Gogh's were painted while he was in that asylum. He painted 70 paintings in 70 days while he was there. In the spring of 1890, just 2 years after he started his prolific work, he checked himself out of the asylum, and that summer, he was crippled with loneliness and anxiety. He couldn't be in his own skin. He painted this painting, and he named it At Eternity's Gate, and days later, he took his own life. He walked into a field, and he shot himself in the chest with a revolver. He didn't die right away. His brother Theo was with him, and his brother Theo says the last words he heard his brother speak were, "The sadness lasts forever." Have you ever felt like that? It's rare for any one of us to feel like that altogether, to feel only like this. But it's also rare for any person who genuinely lives not to have things in their lives that make them feel like this. And I know that just about every one of you in this place can put your finger on some relationship in your life, some fact of your past or your present, some anxiety in the future that doesn't make you feel like this, right? Listen, on Wednesday, I told my friends the story of this painting. There were some friends at our house. They said, "Are you going to talk about that in church?" I said, "Yes, we're not coming." You love someone and they don't love you back? You want to control the lives of your children, but you can't. And you have to watch them injure themselves over and over again. There's some good thing that you long for in your life. You pray for it, but you can't make it happen. You're sure it would be good, but you just can't. There's people in your family who are spiraling downward, and there's nothing that you can do to stop it. You're trapped in some dreadful addiction that you can't free yourself of. You struggle with some illness that eats your life up. Someone in your sphere of influence is cruel to you, and it crushes your soul. For every person who lives a human life, there will be a time or a moment where there is some circumstance that makes them feel like this. Now, the reason I can tell this story and put this painting up here and talk about this brilliant artist who ended it all without losing hope myself is because I've heard what Jesus says to every person who sits in a chair like this. And I want to read it to you, and I want you to listen. I want you to listen with your hearts wide open. He says this, Jesus, in Matthew 11. It's just three verses, 28 through 30. Jesus says, "Come to me, all you that are weary and carrying heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light." Come to me. Those are the first words that Jesus says to every anguished soul, everyone who's so burdened that all of the people in their lives want to get away from them, don't want to bring up what's troubling them. Have you had that experience where you go through something hard and nobody wants to talk to you about it because of how awful it is? Everyone wants to push you away because they know you're just so hurt. Has anyone else had that experience? The first word that Jesus says to every burdened soul is this beautiful phrase, "Come to me." That's because your mess is not too messy for Jesus. That's because the darkness that you carry inside of you is not too dark for him. That's because he cares about you and loves you so much that he wants to be with you even when you are nothing but a person who can only hold their face in their hands. Isn't there something quite beautiful about that man, Jesus, who would say to every person like that, come to me? The thing that Jesus offers to every burdened soul, first of all, is his own presence. Don't you know that the worst part about being in something that's really challenging is being alone in it? Do you know that? I remember sitting in that stranger's house looking at the painting and realizing that as I looked at that man sitting in the chair, that no one could ever understand what I was going through, and that made it 100 times worse. Haven't you felt like that in the thing that you face? Jesus says, come to me, because the thing he offers to every burdened soul is his own presence there with them. And there is something about this man Jesus that makes him uniquely able to be with every struggler, and it is quite simply that from his own experience, he knows just what it is like to sit in a place like that. Jesus knows what it is to be abandoned by his friends. He knows what it is to be left all alone in his anguish. He knows what it is to try very hard to help the people around him and then to watch them day after day misunderstanding him. He knows what it's like to be sad, to be filled with grief, to be in anguish, to be all alone. And because of that, because he himself has experienced all that any one of us could ever experience, loss, grief, because of all of that, he is able to be with every one of us wherever we are, no matter how hard the freight is that we must carry, no matter how hard the burdens are that we must bear. Jesus Christ is able to be with everyone who struggles because he himself has struggled. And so he does not push you away when you have a hard time, but instead he asks you to come near. And it would be good, and it might even be enough if that's all he did, but it's not all he did. There's something else in his words here to every one of us who struggles, that he does not just call us to be with him so he can be there, but he makes a promise. Did you see what the promise was? His promise to everyone who comes to be with him is very plain and simple. I will give you rest. You will find rest for your souls. It's interesting, by the way, that his promise is not, if you have burdens and you carry heavy things, you come to me and I will take them away. Have you ever found yourself facing some challenge and just wish that it would be taken from you? Yes? I have. I think in our impulses often to run away. When I have a hard time, I picture myself sailing on a boat down in St. John in the Virgin Islands. Have you ever been down there? In this daydream of mine, I have leathery skin. No shirt. I have like a 3-foot beard. Seriously, if you ask my wife later, she'll tell you that one of my greatest fantasies is to grow a great big beard. But she won't kiss me if I have a beard. So obviously. I strategize in my heart when I face something difficult. I think, how could I change the circumstances around me so that it would be better? Don't you do that too? How can I change that person out there who makes it difficult? How can I rearrange these relationships so that the burdens that I bear won't be there anymore? How can I change the economy? Or how can I change this physical thing that I or someone I love struggles with? How can I bring that person back? How can I change the things out there? So much of my strategizing about making my life easy really comes down to figuring out how to change the things around me. But look, Jesus does not say, if you come to me with your burdens, I'll take them away. If you come to me with the things that make you weary, I'll be your genie and I'll change everything that you wish were different. He does not say that, but he speaks about something on the deepest and in the deepest parts of us, our souls. Soul is a fascinating word. Anyone watch The Simpsons? Do you remember the episode where Bart sells his soul? They're onto something there. There's more to the soul than that. The soul is not a thing that you have, but it really is the very central part of you. It's the core of who you are as a person. It's the very vital part of you. And what happens in life is that circumstances that we don't like, regrets that we wish were different, guilt and shame, they build up on the outside of who we are, and so that we lose sight of who we actually are. Do you know what I mean? Have you ever seen a person become unreal because of struggle? There's still a real them inside. That's their soul. And it gets covered up with regret and with worry and fear and anxiety and all manners of disguises so that we don't have to let on that we're having a hard time. Jesus' promise to the one who is weary and burdened is not to take something away, but to give something. And do you see what he promises to give? Rest. To that very vital part of you, your soul. The key to that promise is the word rest. The word means, very literally, the word rest means to cause to cease. Think of that for a moment. The word rest means to take something that's in motion and to make it stop. You know what it's like to have a soul that is spinning uncontrollably? To have a heart that's sinking ever further down and down and down. To have a spirit that is like a pendulum that goes from elation to dread. Some of you know this experience, don't you? There's names that psychologists have for it, for every one of these different affects. The heart that just goes down. Have you ever had that experience where your heart is actually sinking? Have you felt that? When Jesus comes to every struggling person whose soul is out of control, whose mind is racing and wild, thinking through everything they fear, being anxious about what's next, playing out every dreadful circumstance that could come if only this happens or that doesn't happen. When Jesus comes to every person like that, what he says to their soul is stop. Cease. Be still. Stop trying to carry that heavy load. Stop trying to drag that thing through your life. Stop swinging this way and that. Stop racing all over the place and be still. Jesus says to every soul that is in its hysterical efforts to try to solve its problems, to every one of you who's anxious and nervous and afraid, to everyone who's hurt and depressed and sad, to everyone who's sitting in that awkward place with their hands in their face and their fists clenched tightly, they're striving here and there to solve their problems. To every one of you, Jesus says, come to me and be still. Stop, swirling soul, and be at rest. Be at peace now. Be still in my presence, Jesus says. Sit here with me. Jesus says, stop and be right here with me. Let all of those worries and anxieties, let them go for a moment and be right here with me, Jesus says. He won't run away. When your soul is at rest and when you are finally the real you, when all of those disguises go away, when everything you've been trying to do to make yourself this or that person is vanished, when you are there right in Jesus' presence, he is with you and he won't go away. And then when you're at rest, when you're ready to hear what he will say to you, listen to what he says. Look at what he says next. And this is a paradox. I want you to know that. He says to the person who's wearied and heavy burdened, he says the word, take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. This is a paradox because I've just now told you that Jesus promises the soul rest, and then the thing he tells the soul that is ready to hear, the thing he tells the soul is, you must take my yoke. Do you know what a yoke is? It's an instrument of hard work. If you don't know exactly what it is, it's a beam of wood that's carved so that it fits on the shoulders, and it's either put on the shoulders of a slave or it attaches two work beasts together. And the reason the yoke is given to either the slave or the beast is so that that person or that animal can do more work than they could otherwise do without it. If there's a man who has to pull some heavy load, a servant and a slave, and he couldn't possibly manage it himself, the master puts a yoke on his shoulders and then ties that thing to him, and now he can pull more. Or if there's a giant heavy plow that needs to be pulled through the dry, arid dirt of that place, and two animals come together, they can't pull it unless they're connected with this heavy beam of wood, and that's called the yoke. Do you see the paradox here? That Jesus offers rest for your soul by giving a yoke. What sense does that make? I'll tell you, it makes no sense at all apart from the man who says it. Look at what he says after he says, take my yoke. He says, learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart. Those words, gentle and humble in heart, those are perfectly descriptive of the man Jesus. And if you would ever come to a person and follow them and let them be your lead or your guide, they ought to be these two things. By the way, Jesus as a rabbi, and that's what he's doing here, he's teaching. He's very unlike the other rabbis of his day. The way it worked with other teachers when Jesus was teaching, if you wanted to be the student of a rabbi, you had to put together your application. We have any high school seniors here? Yeah? Have you applied to college or not?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not fun, is it? Did you hear that? I love it. He said, well, it's kind of easy for me, but... When it came to the other rabbis in those days, like some colleges, you had to put together your best offer. You had to come to the rabbi and prove yourself. You had to make sure that you were up to the task of learning. You had to be the most promising of students who came to that rabbi. Then you had to strike some contract where you basically became the slave of that rabbi. By the way, if you are a parent who's paying for your children to go to one of these colleges, you know what it's like, right? You sort of sell yourself out to them. That's what it was like then too. And only if you were ready to serve your master by feeding him and taking care of his every whim and wish and prove yourself to be the brightest and most capable of students could you ever become the student of any other rabbi. But this fellow Jesus, he didn't wait for people to come to apply. He went to them and said, I want you to be my student. It's quite wonderful, Evan, that you told us about that story where Jesus came to Peter. Peter did not come to him and say, I'd like to be your student. Here's my resume. He was an ordinary fisherman. Like you said, he was an unlikely candidate for the school of Jesus. But Jesus came to him and said, I want you. Over and over again, the people that Jesus comes to make into his students are people you would never think would be students of his. They are outcasts. They're ordinary folks who are fishermen. They're tax collectors. They are even prostitutes and women of ill repute who no one else would ever think to bring along with them. But this is what Jesus is like. He comes to every single sort of person and he says to them all, you come to me and I'll be your teacher. And now we're ready. Now we're right on the edge of learning what he means when he says, take my yoke upon you. The work that he wants you to do, the thing that he means for you to put on your shoulders, it's not a burden once you begin to do it, because he teaches you and me and everyone who'll come to him, everyone who sits like that fellow like this, who's at the end of their rope, who has no more resources, who doesn't know what to do to get themselves out of that spot where all they can think of is, I'm on the edge of eternity and sadness will last forever. Jesus comes to people like that and says, come here and let me teach you. Be my student. I'm gentle. I'm humble. That means if you're so far away, you could never imagine yourself learning from him. He says, that's okay. If you are a fool and you know it, and some of you are and you know it, if you are trapped in a mess that you made yourself and you're so guilty you can't imagine Jesus ever having time for you, to all of you, he comes and he says, no, I'm with you and it's okay. Come with me and I'll teach you. My yoke, the things that I'll put on you are only good for you. Even if you don't know it yet, when you come to me to be a student at first, you'll think you know better than me, but you don't. I know better than you and you must trust me. All he requires is someone who's ready to be taught. to be teachable. That means someone who's ready to say, Jesus, I think I know what's best here, but I'm going to trust you. I think I know it would be best if that young woman that I loved me back, but if not, I'm going to trust you, Jesus. I think I know if only you would give me that job, or take away this illness, or make that person different to me, or change my circumstances. I think I know, Jesus, that if you would do that, then everything would be okay. But I'm ready to say, you know better. What will you teach me, Jesus, if any one of you would do that? I promise you this, and I can make this promise. If any of you would do that, if you'd come to him and say, teach me, there is nothing that he would teach you, nothing that wouldn't be good for you. If you had to leave anything behind because of the words he said, it would be the best thing for you to leave them behind. If you had to change your way of thinking about one thing that you used to understand this way, but now Jesus says, no, listen, it's this way. If you have to revolutionize your mind, if you have to change your direction to go after him, every change that you would find because you followed him would be good for you. And it would be good for your soul. That means the very center of you. It may not look good to other people when they look at you. People often don't want to look at our souls. You might think it's a loss once you start to follow him after you have to give certain things up. But if you follow Jesus as he teaches, this promise is for you. Your turbulent soul will finally come to rest. Your burdens and the things that make you weary may be there still, but so will Jesus, who will be with you and who says to you, listen, take this yoke of learning from me. It's easy. The burden that you carry, if you listen to me, is light. Do you want to learn from him? This is why I've decided that this summer we're going to just learn from him, to listen to the things that he says and learn. If you and if I together, if us as a community, if we gather week after week to simply try to learn from him, I'm sure it would be the very best thing for every one of us. No promises here that your circumstances will change, but a promise that as you come to this Master Jesus, that your soul will learn to rest. Don't you want that? And everything you hear from this good teacher, Jesus, will be good for you and good for the people around you as he makes you into the son of his or the daughter of his that you were made to be. On the edge of that kind of eternity, the kind of eternity that's ready to listen to Jesus and follow him where he leads, that's the edge of eternity that I hope that we can all be on together. And so we'll listen to him this summer. Hasn't it been good already to hear his words? Come to me, all you who are weary and heavy burdened, that's everyone. And I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart. And you will find rest for your souls, because my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Thank God for those words of Jesus. Let's pray together, thanking him. God, thank you. Thank you that you call weary and burdened people to yourself. Thank you that you do not push us away when things are hard and when we're overwhelmed with anxiety and all we have is our needs and our worry. I thank you that you have called me close to you and over again you've given me rest in this soul of mine. I pray that for every anguished soul here this morning, for everyone who carries heavy burdens, that spending time hearing these words would be from you to them a word of hope and comfort. I pray that as we sing now of your invitation to come to you and to rest, that our hearts would be lifted, that we would be encouraged, to know you and to know your grace and your mercy and your love. I thank you so much for Jesus and for the words that he speaks to us all. In his name we pray. Amen.